This is Basketball Central on Sportsnet 650 with Marcus Fitzgerald.
Here is Durant.
Harden trying to get free. Down to three, down to two. It's a three. Good! Good! He got it! James Harden, a flamethrower!
And then pick and roll, trying to get him on Irving. Irving and Curry, one-on-one. Irving puts it up. Let's go! Kyrie Irving from downtown!
We have some high expectations. You know, I'm not going to wane from that that's why we brought in who we have here, and that includes the coaching staff as well. So it's a group, a combined effort of collaboration between players and coaches, without a doubt.
That is Brooklyn Nets GM Sean Marks. Marcus Fitzgerald with you on a Tuesday night. This is Basketball Central on your home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650. What a show, because we've got things to talk about. It's funny how things work out. You know, a week ago, wondering where James Harden's going to end up. It was last Tuesday talking about maybe it's Philadelphia, maybe it's Brooklyn. Well, now we have an answer. And in fact, not only is James Harden a Brooklyn Net, but he looks like James Harden over the course of the first couple of games in a Nets uniform. One on the weekend against Orlando, and then last night against Giannis and the Milwaukee Bucks. He has looked great so far. How you doing? Marcus Fitzgerald. You can find me on Twitter at Marcus Fitzy. You can check us out on the website as well. Sportsnet.ca/650, the Basketball Central tab. Anything that you missed over the last couple of weeks, you can double back and check it out. Joining me in just a little bit, we're going to go out to Houston. I want to get the fallout from the Harden deal. Salman Ali from ESPN 97.5 in Houston is going to join us. We know what it looks like now in Brooklyn. There are championship expectations there with those three guys. And in fact, breaking news as we record this on a Tuesday afternoon, Kyrie Irving will play alongside Kevin Durant and James Harden tomorrow night for the first time, oddly enough, against one of his old teams, the Cleveland Cavaliers. So we are going to get our very first look at those three together on the floor tomorrow. But we will get into what things look like now in Houston. And if you're unfamiliar with the deal, we've had a week to digest it now, but the Rockets, in effect, getting back three first-rounders from the Brooklyn Nets, also four pick swaps. So the Nets have given up their entire draft capital for the next half decade. Victor Oladipo eventually came over to the Rockets as well in that deal. Caris LeVert went to Houston first, and then the Rockets flipped him to Indiana for Victor Oladipo, who made his Rockets debut last night, scored 32 points in a loss to the Bulls. But it's been a wild week in the NBA. It usually is, headlined by the Harden trade, and that's kind of where we begin right now. The PR spin from Harden post-trade has been wild, if not totally expected. Don't forget, it was just last Tuesday. He talked to the media for 90 seconds after a loss to the Lakers, said the situation wasn't fixable. Thanks so much. He got up from the podium. He left. And then the next day, James Harden was no longer a Houston Rocket. So that makes you think, well, you know, how far along were they in the talks? Because all it took was a couple of losses to the Lakers and James Harden to take to the media and say, it can't be fixable. I need to get out of here. He's gone the next day. I mean, there were initial reports that they were going to keep him away from the team. So you thought, okay, it's going to play out for 2 or 3 weeks, maybe a month the most. It might look like a Kawhi Leonard situation in San Antonio. I mean, I don't know if it was going to last a year, but you thought for sure, okay, 2 weeks. 2 weeks, and then we'll have our resolution. I'm sure the Rockets will talk to the Sixers. They'll talk to the Nets, and then a deal will be hammered out. I didn't expect it to get done that quickly. That's the most impressive thing here. And there was a lot of moving parts, too. So you have to wonder just how much the Rockets were talking to the Brooklyn Nets before they got this deal done. And hopefully Salman can shed some light on that as he'll join us in just a few minutes. If Harden hadn't done that, though, if Harden hadn't taken to the media, gone on Zoom and spoke for 90 full seconds about how things weren't going to be fixed in Houston, how long would the Rockets have been willing to wait? Like, again, they were going to keep him away from the team, but, I mean, were they going to wait 2 months? Were they going to wait till the deadline? You know? Were they waiting for a Ben Simmons offer? Were they waiting to extract as many draft picks from the Brooklyn Nets as they possibly could, which they ended up doing anyway? Raphael Stone gets some credit there. But how long were they willing to wait to do this if Harden didn't say that? And how long were they willing to watch him, you know, not play up to his standards, let's just say. I mean, Harden was great to start the season for the first three games, but then after that, he really leveled off. He had that game against Portland. It was like 44 and 17 assists. And then after that, just pedestrian numbers for Harden. And not the good pedestrian either, the bad pedestrian. That's what we saw over Harden over the last little bit. And the Rockets now are 4-7. They're one of the worst teams in the West, but now they can kind of move on from this. They have their little core in place, if you want to call it that. Victor Oladipo, who's in a contract year, by the way. Maybe that was part of the appeal on the Houston side of things. We know about Tillman Fertitta. We know he doesn't like to spend a ton of money. Maybe he would have preferred a expiring contract in Oladipo and a bunch of draft picks, which are cost-controlled, over a guy like Ben Simmons, who is already locked into his second contract, 5 years, $170 million. Maybe Tillman Fertitta didn't want to lock into that. Maybe he didn't want to make a deal with Daryl Morey. There's lots of factors at play that have led James Harden to the Brooklyn Nets, but you wonder just how much that played into it. Joining me right now on Basketball Central, he is with ESPN 97.5 in Houston, where he covers the Houston Rockets, where there's been quite a few changes over the last few days or so. He is Salman Ali. Salman, thanks so much for doing this. How are you? How are things in Houston, Texas?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me. Things are doing well in Houston. Weather's pretty cold, but I guess that's not unusual this time of year. It's gonna change tomorrow, though. I know. That's how it always works.
Well, now that you made that proclamation, of course it's going to change. That's usually how it goes. Now, here's the thing, Salman. I did this show last Tuesday, and I was talking about James Harden, Bradley Beal, who's the more in-demand superstar. Little did I know, as soon as that show went live, probably about half an hour after that, James Harden, you know, the Rockets lose to the Lakers. He does the infamous, now infamous, 90-second Zoom press conference where he says that things can't be fixed. And then a day later, he gets moved to the Brooklyn Nets. It's been almost a full week now. Can you give us a sense of what the culture is like in Houston? Is there a sense of relief now that James Harden is no longer the issue of the Houston Rockets and now he's with the Brooklyn Nets?
Well, certainly for new head coach Steven Silas, there's some relief. He has an actual stable roster to work with. But I'm sure if you're a fan of the team or if you were, you know, in that front office, you'd rather have James Harden to build around because this team had title aspirations. And now they're going into a new stage of their franchise's career, I guess. And I don't know how they're taking it. My sense is the fans understand that it was time and they're happy with the return Houston got. But as far as the team, I mean, they're super excited to test out what they have with Victor Oladipo and John Wall, just to see what they have. Because all season, you know, they really haven't got the chance to see what they have because of all this drama. And now, at least as far as the drama goes, that stuff's over.
Let's say, Salman, that Harden doesn't have that hissy fit a week ago. How much longer do you think the Rockets would have actually waited to get that deal done? Did it take that press conference to really push things forward? Would they have waited even longer?
So I asked GM Rafael Stone about this, and he told me that they were already in conversations for this deal back before the summer. And this is one of those things where, like, yes, the press conference happened, but according to Kelly Eco of The Athletic, that deal was already poised to go down before Harden even said anything. And Harden was aware that deal was poised to go down. So Harden, knowing that, came on there, kind of tried to push Houston over the ledge, although they were already pretty close to finalizing that deal. It is hard to believe that that didn't have any impact, though, because, I mean, how could it not? It's pretty incendiary stuff that he said there. But as far as I'm concerned, I thought he was going to get moved before the deadline anyways, because you look at the history of franchise superstars wanting out, usually as soon as the trade demand is made, there's like a 6-month clock that starts up and those stars are moved within that 6-month time frame. The only time that hasn't happened in the last 20 years is Kobe Bryant with the Lakers. And that was an extremely rare circumstance. It almost never happens.
Well, and getting back to, I guess, the return, and I'll ask you about Harden's legacy in a little bit here. Rafael Stone says he likes having a ton of draft picks. He likes that flexibility. But if I could put you in his shoes for a minute, would you rather have Ben Simmons? Because I know it came down to the Nets and the Sixers. Would you rather have the cost control of the draft picks for the next half decade? Or would you take a guy like Ben Simmons? Like if you're Rafael Stone, what would you do?
So if you remember that day that the trade happened, there was actually reporting, like, the deal came out like 2 hours ahead of time, what the Nets were offering. And as soon as it came out that they were offering 4 first round pick swaps and 4, you know, and 4 first round picks, I was like, you got to take that deal. That's better than the Philadelphia deal. It's just, that's an unheard of king's ransom of draft picks, historical in terms of like what you've seen for franchise superstars before. And as soon as the details came out, I thought that's a no-brainer. You got to do that, because it's not just that, okay, maybe those picks are in the late 20s, but those picks are trade fodder if you choose to go after another cornerstone piece in the future. And that cornerstone piece could be better than Simmons. You don't know that. And I'm a big fan of Simmons. Before the details came out about what the Nets were offering, I would have said Simmons, but I mean, those picks were unprotected going up until 2028. That's really unheard of, really unheard of. And I think Houston's happy with what they got. Brooklyn's obviously happy with what they got. And I think this was the best deal for both sides.
There was some buzz before the deal went down, Tillman, that, Tillman Fertitta didn't want to trade James Harden to the Sixers because it had to do with Daryl Morey. From what you gathered, how much truth to that was out there? Was there lingering bitterness that maybe the Rockets didn't want to actually deal with the Sixers in this instance?
I'm sure there was. And what's funny is when Daryl Morey stepped down, he actually told Tillman Fertitta a couple of years back that, hey, listen, like, maybe I might, you know, leave Houston and go out to the East Coast because that's where my family wants to live. So Tillman was aware that he wanted to go out to the East Coast somewhere because that's where Daryl's from. And, you know, I'm assuming he didn't know that he was going to leave literally next week, the week after he stepped down from Rockets. And that's probably where the bitterness lies. I think perhaps if the deals were close enough that Houston would have favored the Brooklyn offer. But I think ultimately if Philadelphia put out, you know, a similar King's Ransom kind of offer, they would have taken it. I think Tillman gave GM Rafael Stone that kind of trust to make that kind of a decision for them. And honestly, I think they made the right call. But if Philadelphia was offering Simmons plus a similar picks package, perhaps not 8, obviously, because you're not getting the franchise superstar, but maybe 4 picks or 2 or 3 picks, you know, I think maybe Houston decides to go for that offer. But I mean, there was some haggling over certain players like Tyrese Maxey from the Sixers side. And I think ultimately Houston decided we have to go with the sure thing here. And they chose the Brooklyn offer.
Salman Ali of ESPN 97.5 in Houston joining us on Basketball Central here on Sportsnet 650. We'll get into the return now. Victor Oladipo is an expiring contract at the end of the year, but he made his debut last night. He had 32 points. I mean, once John Wall gets back, can this be a competitive backcourt in the West? Is there play-in potential for this team, or can they be even better?
Yeah, I think they're going to be around, you know, 9-10 seed in the West right as of right now. Without seeing what they have, I just looking at the roster, there's just too much talent there for them not to be that. But as far as going higher, I think Houston just wants to see what they have there. I mean, there's just an unbelievable amount of offensive talent on that team. You're talking about Christian Wood, John Wall, Victor Oladipo, Eric Gordon coming off the bench. Daniel House hasn't even returned yet. They have a lot of shooting. They got Ben McLemore off the bench. There's a lot of offensive talent there. And I was actually pretty high on Houston before the season because I thought if Harden was there, that was going to be a 50-win team. So without Harden, obviously the ceiling is going to be significantly lower, but can they win 42 games up to 45? Perhaps. I think that's reasonable. And if they get in that range, you know, you're talking perhaps the playoffs. And I think Houston, more than anything, just wants to get as close to Miami as possible in terms of record. And the reason I say that is they owe a pick swap to Miami. So in order for Houston to salvage that kind of pick, if they can get perhaps better than Miami's record or just as close as they possibly can, that pick swap doesn't hurt as much. This is from the Russell Westbrook trade, by the way. Mm-hmm. So if they can get as close as they can to Miami's record, I think that's probably going to be their goal this season. So I think this is going to be a competitive roster. They have all the incentive to be competitive from the front office standpoint. Rafael Stone said in the presser last week, or a couple of days ago, I'm sorry, that they intend to be competitive at the trade deadline and use that trade exception that they got from the Harden deal, that $10 million trade exception, to see what kind of player they can get. And I don't think they're going to go deep into the luxury tax or anything, but I think they do intend to try and contend this season for the playoffs just because they have every incentive to.
Well, I know that Oladipo has said that he's evaluating everything just the same way that you would make a business decision before he decides on potentially signing long-term with Houston. What has to happen, though, in Houston in order for Oladipo to stick around? Is it all based on team success, or is there more at play there?
Yeah, that's interesting because so if you go back to that Russell Westbrook trade, the only picks that Houston didn't give up were 2021 and 2022. So theoretically, the next 2 years after this season are the only opportunities Houston has to bottom out. So if they were to let Victor Oladipo walk, my assumption is that they plan to bottom out and they plan to, you know, tear up the cupboards and trade John Wall, trade Eric Gordon, trade and everybody that they can to get as many assets as they can to go to do a traditional rebuild. But if they find that they're more competitive than they think this season, I think as Victor Oladipo said, I think it's the same on both sides. Like they both want to see how it goes, because let's say they, you know, exceed expectations more than you or I think they can be, you know, maybe they're a sixth seed in the Western Conference. If they're that, then perhaps they decide they want to be competitive in rebuild, much like the Clippers did a couple years ago, or like the Thunder did last year, right? And if they're going to do that, it might be worth bringing Victor Oladipo back. It really depends on the number, though, because Houston's in that stage in their lifespan as a franchise where they can no longer sign bad contracts. When you have James Harden, you can sign bad contracts because you already have your cornerstone piece. I don't think Houston has that cornerstone piece yet, so they can't afford to sign bad contracts. They don't want anything tying them down. They want every contract they have to be tradable. So I think it really depends on the number Victor Oladipo gets this summer. He is going to be in high demand because of just the free agent class has been drained because of all these players signing their extensions. So if he gets like a max contract, I'm not sure if Houston touches that. But if he gets something perhaps lower than that, something a little bit more tradable in the future, I think Houston, you know, is definitely interested.
John Wall has missed some time here and there, but from what you've seen from him, as limited as it may be, are you encouraged, or are you concerned that maybe, you know, the Achilles injury is something that might be too tough for him to come back from?
So it's interesting. When John Wall was first traded to the Rockets, I thought that was a surefire sign that Houston intended to be bad this season and trade James Harden, because I thought they were doing that trade for the first round pick they were getting back. But John Wall looked so good in those first few games, just his speed in general. Like, he looked like Washington Wizards John Wall from a speed standpoint. Obviously, he still has a long ways to go till he's that. But I think in terms of what Houston got back for, you know, Russell Westbrook, they're pretty happy with it. And I think in terms of what we expect to see from John Wall this season, if he can get back to like 75% to 80% of what that John Wall was in Washington, Houston's pretty happy with that. And I don't think, you know, this is just my prediction, I don't think he plays out his contract in Houston, just because Houston intends to rebuild. It does not benefit them to have that contract on the books. It's a heavy sum. And I think there's going to be teams, if he shows out this season, if he has a really, really strong playoff performance, then perhaps they shop him. And this summer, they see what kind of return they can get for him. It'll be interesting to see what he does when he comes back. But I think you look at players that come back from Achilles injuries, the history is not good. And particularly like the games played, they always miss like 40% of the following season, something like that. Kevin Pelton wrote this column about players returning from Achilles injuries, and he cited a stat like that. And, you know, this is kind of the stuff you see, you know, sore legs, you know, calf soreness, stuff like that is the kind of stuff you see when players return from Achilles injuries. So I think that's going to be something for Houston's training staff to monitor. But if they can get a good John Wall by the playoff time, that's going to work out well for them.
Yeah, that's a good point. And maybe, you know, KD is the exception to the rule, at least for right now. I mean, he's been great coming off of his injury. You know, Salman, I will admit, much like Shaquille O'Neal, I was a bit of a casual on Christian Wood coming into the season. I only really learned who he was about mid-August. But all it takes with Christian Wood is to watch about 5 minutes of YouTube highlight videos, and you realize, okay, this guy's really good. Has Wood surpassed your expectations since signing with Houston in the offseason?
Offensively, for sure. He looks, I mean, great offensively. There's really nothing he can do other than maybe passing the ball. He's his finishing around the rim is probably the most impressive to me. Like, yeah, that he can shoot threes. Yes, he can do a lot of stuff that big men aren't supposed to do, but the finishing at the rim is really what completes him as a player. When you can finish around the rim with ease like that, with the finger rolls, with the floaters, with, you know, different arrays of finishing around the rim, I think that's a trait that few big men in the NBA have. And I think that allows him to space the floor and be a threat out there, because people aren't going to guard him out there. They aren't going to stretch out all that far, because they know how well he can finish. And offensively, again, he's surpassed expectations, but defensively, he has a long way to go. I mean, he looks really rough out there right now. In terms of an impact standpoint, he's been so good offensively, but he's been so bad defensively that I think it might actually be a net neutral. We'll see. I haven't actually looked at the numbers in a couple of weeks, but a couple of weeks ago when I did look at them, he was actually a net negative. But I think probably when it shakes out, he'll end up being a slight positive by the end of the year. He has a long way to go in terms of learning the NBA defense, because that's probably his biggest weakness so far. But once he does learn that, that's a nice piece the Rockets got for, what, $36 million over 3 years? That's a fantastic deal.
So I'm going to let you out on this one. This is a complicated question, but they love this stuff on Twitter. What will James Harden be most remembered for in Houston? Scoring titles, MVP, but ultimately falling short in the playoffs. As time goes by, I'm sure he'll be celebrated a little bit more, but what's he going to be remembered for the most in Clutch City?
So this is just my opinion, right? I can't speak for the fans, yeah. But I will say that I think the fans will get over this ugly ending. And this was an ugly ending. Don't get me wrong. This was very much Vince Carter-esque in terms of how he exited Houston. But I think as time goes on, time heals old wounds. And I think, I mean, they made two Western Conference finals with them. They almost won the NBA championship, if not for a torn hamstring. I really do believe the fans are going to be pretty grateful for what he has been able to bring to that franchise. I mean, he is going to go down as the second greatest player in franchise history right after Hakeem Olajuwon. And I realize that's me saying he's going to be better than Moses Malone, but I do think I am that high on him as a player. I think he's one of the 25 greatest players of all time. And I think, you know, yes, he had some shortcomings come to playoffs, but I think ultimately he made them one of the more relevant franchises in the league for 8 years. And I remember what they were before those 8 years. They were not relevant at all. They were very much a come to trade deadline. They might be relevant because they had a really exciting general manager in Daryl Morey. But other than that, they were not relevant for, you know, 3/4 of the year. So he put them on the NBA map again after the Tracy McGrady and Yao Ming era. So I think, I'll say this, this is just a wild prediction. And I was going to say this on my podcast, but I suppose I might as well say it here. I would not be surprised if he hasn't played his final basketball game in a Rockets uniform.
Really?
Maybe that's when he's 35 and old and gray. Maybe he signs a 10-day contract, whatever. But I think he does return to the franchise in some form or fashion. At some point. That's just a wild prediction that I have a gut feeling. If you read his press release that he gave a couple of days ago, he had a line in there about unpaid debts to Houston, and that he would repay these debts to Houston at some point. And I'm not sure what he meant by that, but I took it to mean that he might return to Houston in some form or fashion. I don't think it would be a huge jump for me to say that's going to be in his prime. But perhaps towards the end of his career, like we've seen other franchise, you know, icons do, you know, they come back at the end of their career, they sign like a 10-day contract, you know, they end their career on the right terms, maybe something like that. But I would not be surprised if something like that happens with Harden.
Red Nation Hoops, when does the next one drop?
Comes out next week.
All right. And that's on the Blue Wire Podcast Network, yeah?
Yep.
All right, Salman, thanks so much for doing this, and hopefully we'll do it again soon.
For sure. Thanks for having me on.
All right, that's Salman Ali, ESPN Radio in Houston. Interesting right at the end there. Maybe one day James Harden returns. Now, he wouldn't be in his prime like LeBron James coming back to Cleveland, but maybe one day. Also, some good points there. I mean, we've seen markets in different sports trade star athletes under some tough circumstances. Pavel Bure certainly sticks out here. He's right about that. Time heals all wounds, and maybe they'll get that way in Houston, which they're kind of used to. Is Deshaun Watson going to get traded by the Houston Texans anytime soon? It's been a rough go in that city overall, but, you know, interesting. Maybe James Harden comes back one day. But he certainly led them to relevance as a guy who wasn't a superstar when he got there. He certainly is now, as he gets to play with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving for the first time together tomorrow night against the Cleveland Cavaliers. We'll talk more about that coming up. You've got it on Basketball Central. This is Sportsnet 650.
Basketball Central continues on Sportsnet 650 with your host, Marcus Fitzgerald.
Back, Basketball Central on a Tuesday night. Marcus Fitzgerald with you on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. By the way, next action for Vancouver tomorrow night, home opener against the Montreal Canadiens, a 7 o'clock start. We'll have the 5 p.m. pregame show for you leading up to that as the Canucks try to rebound after a rough start to the season. Three losses in four games, but a home set coming up against the Habs that begins tomorrow. We're looking forward to bringing you that. But of course, we're talking hoops tonight, talking a lot about James Harden, Kyrie Irving, the Brooklyn Nets. Breaking news on a Tuesday as we record on a Tuesday afternoon. Kyrie Irving is going to play tomorrow night. He will make his Nets debut alongside James Harden for the first time. Kevin Durant as well. The Nets have played a couple of games here with James Harden, and Harden's been good. Harden has been James Harden. He has lost the fat suit suddenly. He's averaged 33 points the first couple of games, 12 assists, I think, 9 rebounds. Like, he looks like James Harden again, and he looks happy. The PR tour that James went on immediately following the trade, you knew it was coming because that's what these guys do, but he looks engaged and he looks like he's in a good space again. So that's good for the league in a sense. Certainly it gives us a lot to talk about, the formation of a new power trio. Looking forward to tomorrow night, ironically enough, easy for me to say, Kyrie facing one of his old squads. But the Nets did meet the media today to talk about the latest developments, and that included Kyrie Irving. Now, the thing with Kyrie, he's missed the last 7 games here. He was on a personal absence. You know, we weren't really sure where his mind was at, and you certainly hope that Kyrie was okay. It seems like he is, but he did meet the media earlier today to talk about kind of where his head has been at over the last little bit. Here it is. This is Kyrie Irving a little earlier today.
You know, pretty interesting in watching when you take a break from everything. There's just so many assumptions about what's going on. And so many people feel like they know me best. They have no idea who I am, nor what I'm about, or what I stand for, or even attempt to take the time, or even for me to invite them to take the time. So it's a two-way street. And when things become overwhelming in life, you know, you just got to take a step back and realize what's important. And I love to play. That's never been questioned. I've committed myself. You know, when this wasn't even a thing for me, you know, I didn't really care about media, didn't really care about the fandom. All I cared about was just the ethics of the game and being taught the fundamentals. And now that it's become bigger and it's more of a responsibility that I have in this position I'm in, I'm grateful because I'm able to stand on this platform with others alongside of me that have sacrificed and are going through similar things. So I'm not alone in this. And, you know, that's just a big thing about also mental health, you know, just coming in and being balanced with yourself first and then being able to perform. So, you know, with everything going on in the world politically, socially, like I said, it's hard to ignore. I want to make changes daily. You know, there are so many oppressed communities, so many things going on that are bigger than just a ball going in the rim. So for me, I just, like I said, it's just the balance of it. Of knowing I can delegate my responsibilities off the court to people that I'm surrounded around that are for the fight and are fighting behind the scenes and in front in the lines. And, you know, like I said, I'm not the only one that's fighting. So I'm grateful to unify with others. And that's all I've tried to do. And on the court, the same way, just play with a smile, leave something that I've felt very dear to my heart with this game. And then, you know, whatever my legacy is after that as a person, that's all I really care about.
All right, so that's Brooklyn Nets guard Kyrie Irving a little earlier today talking about kind of where he's been at over the last little bit. Again, he's missed the last seven games for personal reasons. The Nets for a little while kind of weren't sure where he was at, but apparently Kyrie has addressed everybody he's needed to address. That's according to Kyrie directly. Steve Nash saying today that they're happy to have Kyrie back, and they're happy to get back on the court. Kyrie also saying that he's excited to get on the court with his new teammate James Harden, and I think we're all excited to see how things are going to play out. You know, the thing with Kyrie Irving, obviously there's a lot there. There's been a lot there over the last few years. He wanted the divorce from LeBron James, didn't want to play Robin to LeBron's Batman, went to Boston, kind of struggled to be that alpha dog leader to the point where he had to call LeBron and apologize for giving him a hard time as a young kid. Now he's in a situation where not only is he not Robin, he may be Alfred. There was that tweet where it's like, okay, he's not going to be Batman. He's not going to be Robin. He's probably Alfred now, because those are the two alphas in Brooklyn. It's Kevin Durant and James Harden and then Kyrie Irving. So we don't know how this is totally going to work. Obviously, the shot creation, the offense is going to be there. That's not going to be a problem. Maybe defensively there's going to be some questions, but the Nets do have a pretty good coaching staff to handle all that. I've talked about Steve Nash and Mike D'Antoni. Maybe they're not the most defensive minds, you know, in this league, but there's also Ime Udoka, there's Jacques Vaughn as well. In fact, former head coach David Fizdale of ESPN joined Smith and Jones out in Toronto, our friends at Fan 590. He talked about the challenges that the Nets coaching staff is going to have dealing with this big three. Some interesting stuff here.
No, and I think people look at the team because of the talent and think that it's just easy, and it's not. It is not just easy, because for them, a championship a bust. And so that's a lot of pressure to have on you. But I think that, you know, ultimately Steve is a guy that has, you know, done it at the highest levels as a player. He surrounded himself with great basketball minds. You know, D'Antoni just coached James Harden. You can't even put into account how valuable that is. Ime Udoka is going to be a head coach before you can blink. I grew up with Jacques Vaughn. I still say to this day, a lot of people don't know this. Jacques Vaughn is one of the great basketball minds out there. He thinks the game in a way that I have not been around, and he's been that way since the sixth grade. And so these guys, they have a staff that can go with the talent, that can coach the talent, that have the respect of the players. And so I'm looking at these guys saying the bottom line at the end of the day for them is, can they keep the off-the-court crap out of the way, right? Because they're a lightning rod. And so it's not going to be about the talent. You can already see the offense fits. You know, all these guys can dribble, pass, shoot. They've already shown an ability to trust. I think it's going to come down. When we're going to see if it all really works is in the playoffs, when they face somebody really formidable for seven games and they get squeezed. Can they trust in those moments? Can they believe in each other? Can their defense hold? And those are going to be the fundamentals that Steve is preaching to them, that they have to hammer home every single day. And I think he can do that. And I think he will be able to manage the egos, because you're talking about, again, two-time MVP, self-made player. And by the way, I forgot to mention, Amari Stoudemire, greatest roller this league's ever seen. So, yeah, he's on the coaching staff as well. So, you know, I really think they're put together to win. I think Steven's going to face those challenges, face them down well, and we're going to see some exciting ball out of them.
That's some good stuff there from ESPN's David Fizdale. He joined Smith and Jones out in Toronto on the Fan 590 today, talking about the challenges that lie ahead for Steve Nash as a first-year head coach. You know, he takes this job, and he has Kevin Durant, he has Kyrie Irving, and it wasn't that long after he got the job where people are already asking him about James Harden. So, you know, for a while there, that mindset for the Nets and for Steve Nash was something to consider, and now this is real, and now you wonder how they're going to incorporate all three of these guys offensively. There's going to be stretches where all three players are on the floor at the same time, and I don't know how you guard that at all. You can't help off of any of them, because any of them can create off the dribble. Any of them can be effective in the mid-range, even though we haven't seen that much from James Harden over the last few years in the Mike D'Antoni era in Houston. That's the other part of this, is that D'Antoni, of course, is on that Brooklyn staff. He just worked with James Harden for the better part of a half a decade. He knows how to utilize him better than most. But, you know, how do you defend that? You don't. It's been hard enough for Orlando and Milwaukee to defend both Kevin Durant and James Harden. Now you put Kyrie Irving into the mix. Kyrie Irving, one of the better ISO scorers in the game, one of the better ball handlers in the game, can get to the rim, finish at the rim better than anybody in the NBA, arguably. I don't know how you handle that defensively. If you help off any one of them can kill you from about 30 feet. And then their fourth best player, Joe Harris, is an all-time three-point percentage guy. This is a Nets team that's going to average probably 120 a night. They're going to score 125, 130 on the regular. The question is, how much are they going to give up at the defensive end? I mean, the first game against Orlando on the weekend, they beat them by 10. They faced an Orlando team that, A, is the Orlando Magic, B, run the second night of a back-to-back. And then last night, a good Milwaukee team, but again, they needed 125 to win, and they needed Kevin Durant to hit a three late, and they needed Chris Middleton to miss a game-winning shot. They very easily could have lost that game. Giannis had a big night, too, as well, for Milwaukee. Now, Milwaukee's not the same defensive team they were a year ago. They've lost some bodies, but, you know, there's going to be a situation, and David Fizdale kind of alluded to that in the interview with Paul Jones and Eric Smith out in Toronto, that, you know, the Nets could get squeezed offensively in a postseason matchup. What if they get a bad matchup? What if there is a scenario where they face a team where they can't guard anybody? You ask yourself, who on this team, if they get to the finals, if the Nets come out of the East, and let's say the Lakers come out of the West for sake of the conversation, who on that team guards Anthony Davis? Are you going to waste Kevin Durant on Anthony Davis defensively and wear him out? Or is that something you can do because you've got James Harden and Kyrie Irving to create all your offense? It's a little concerning that arguably their best defensive player right now, because Jared Allen got traded to Cleveland, is Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant has the potential to be a defensive player of the year. That's how good he is. He's better on the defensive end of the floor than you might think. We saw that in Golden State at times when they went small. You put KD at center, the guy can protect the rim. He's capable of that. I don't know that you want him doing that all the time, but he's certainly capable of doing so. But I don't know that you want him doing that in a seven-game playoff series. So that's what the Nets coaching staff is going to have to figure out. The other thing with this new marriage in Brooklyn, particularly between KD and James Harden, there was a comment made by Harden saying, you know, hey, when we played together in Oklahoma City, we're kids. We were kids then. We're men now. And David Fizdale, getting back to that piece on Smith and Jones out in Toronto, talking about the difference between the OKC Durant and Harden and the Brooklyn KD and Harden. Listen to this.
Well, one, his statement is absolutely correct. Those are not the guys we beat in the finals all those years ago. So what you're seeing is Kevin Durant, former MVP, finals MVP, you know, one of the most, I mean, come on, this guy's probably one of the greatest scorers, if not the greatest scorer the league has ever seen. Maybe not by numbers, but by effectiveness. No, you got to put him up there. And then you're talking about James Harden, the ultimate offensive machine, the guy that you cannot make a mistake on, and now he's on a team full of shooters, playmakers, and guys that don't have, you know, that can take the weight off of him from a night-to-night basis. And, you know, with Kyrie, I expect him to win the East. Without Kyrie, they still should be contending. But to be fair, that team did not have a training camp together, and it's going to take them some time. They're going to probably hit a bump, maybe two in the during the season. And I think if they can get Kyrie back and if they can limit the off-the-court noise, they, with the talent that they have and the staff, the coaching staff that they have a real shot at winning the title.
It's David Fizdale in Toronto today saying straight out that, yes, the Nets are capable of winning a championship. And I don't disagree with them there, although I will say when the trade went down back last Wednesday, I thought, okay, it's a lot of points, 135, 140 a night maybe if you need it. But when you need a stop, when things get tight in the playoffs, you need adjustments, you need to make adjustments. How does that change the way Steve Nash looks at lineups in Brooklyn? How do you stagger that? Because really, I mean, It's great if you can have all three of them on the court at the same time, but at the end of the day, what you ultimately would want, you'd want a scenario where you have at least one or even two of those elite playmakers on the court at the same time. That's what NBA teams strive to do. That's why NBA teams these days will completely mortgage their future, just like the Brooklyn Nets did in this deal, just like the LA Clippers did in the deal for Paul George, much like the Lakers did for Anthony Davis. If you want to win in the NBA now, A, you need superstars, and B, you have to be fearless about giving up your future to do it. I mean, you compare that to the NHL, it takes teams months to trade some third-line winger for a second-pairing defenseman because they're worried about implications and maybe teams ask for draft picks and NHL teams don't want to part with draft picks at all. Totally different in the NBA. It's only a 12- to 15-man roster. If you want to win, you need a superstar, at least one, to give yourself a chance. And in order to acquire a superstar, which is just about impossible, you have to break the bank. That's what the Nets have done here. That's what the Clippers did with Paul George, to mixed results so far. That's what the Lakers did with Anthony Davis, to strong results. And yes, I know the Lakers lucked out because LeBron James just decided he was going to come to Los Angeles. That's a Laker thing. I get it. But if you want to win in the NBA, you got to take those swings. The Milwaukee Bucks as well, another example of that. You gave up three picks for Jrue Holiday. Jrue Holiday, compared to the guys that I just listed, a little further down the list. But you have Giannis. You have to augment his skills, his talents. And in order to do that, you got to swing for the fences. You want to win in the NBA, that's what you got to do. Throw your draft picks out the window. And if that is the case, if you decide to do that, Sam Presti at Oklahoma City is probably going to scoop that right up. And just some leftover thoughts on Kyrie Irving as well. You heard him talking about kind of where he's at mentally going into this new part of the season, playing with a new teammate in James Harden. A, it sounds like Kyrie is doing okay, which really should have been the first concern. We talked about that on the show last week with TNT's Jared Greenberg. I like some of that stuff in there. You know, Kyrie is right in the sense that, yes, of course, there really is a whole lot more than just putting a ball through a hoop. And Kyrie has actually done quite a bit to inspire change, to create change within his community. There's a report that he bought a house for the family of George Floyd recently. So he is putting his money where his mouth is. He is trying to make a difference. And, you know, in today's world, we're far more conditioned to listen to those who may be going through it. You certainly have to give people a chance to explain what's going on when it comes to their mental health. And you know what? If this had happened 10 years ago, I'm sure Kyrie would have been raked over the coals for this. I'm sure he would have. People wouldn't have been nearly as sensitive to it. I'm sure the Nets have handled it well. Obviously, there was a little confusion as to where Kyrie was. He showed up on social media, maskless at a family birthday party, which if that's his bubble, if that's what he's allowed to do, then he's going to do it. But, you know, I would presume the Nets have handled this okay. Obviously, they're getting him back tomorrow night against the Cleveland Cavaliers. That was the big breaking news today. So we are going to see the big three tomorrow. But he has caught some criticism. I mean, the Nets made it sound like they weren't sure when he was going to come back. And if that truly is the case, Kyrie should probably get scolded for that just a touch. I mean, at the very least, you have to let your employer know if you're not going to show up to work. I mean, imagine doing that. You know, you're working your 9-to-5 or you're working your shift and suddenly you just decide, you know what, I don't feel like it. I'll see you guys in a week. If we could do that, hey, life would be great. But you have to at least disclose that with your employer. It sounds initially like Kyrie maybe didn't do that, although it did sound like today that he did talk to everybody that he needed to talk to. And, you know, Kyrie's a dude who's constantly questioning things, which is good, but I'm not sure you can trust him entirely. Like, the question is Kyrie going to be around for the long haul here? Is he going to have, I don't want to say episodes because I think that's a little insensitive, but are there going to be stretches where Kyrie decides that he needs to take time away, where he needs to, you know, take a step back for a week or 10 days like we just saw? I mean, he just missed a 7-game stretch. So if you're factoring in that in order for Kyrie to be right, in order for Kyrie to be in the right state of mind, he does have to take these little breaks, at the very least, you've still got Kevin Durant and James Harden. And I think that's why the Nets really upped the ante on this offer. Again, Raphael Stone of the Houston Rockets saying they were far more intrigued with Brooklyn's offer at the end of the day, even though apparently the Sixers were dangling Ben Simmons to the point where Simmons' agent informed him that he should be ready and prepared for a trade to Houston. And you look at that just on its surface and you think, well, wouldn't you rather have Ben Simmons over a big pile of draft picks where you're not totally sure what those draft picks are going to pan out to be? But you know, that's a Rockets decision, something we talked about with Salman Ali in the first segment of the show. And again, if you want to catch that, you can catch us out on the website, sportsnet.ca/650, the Basketball Central page. But, you know, that's why the Nets had to up that ante. That's why they had to increase that offer a little bit. They wanted to make sure they brought in James Harden because they wanted insurance in the event that Kyrie decided, yeah, my mind's not right, I'll see you guys in a week. Because, again, it's 2021, and if it's a mental health thing and Kyrie comes to them, at least comes to them and says, hey, mind's not right, got to take some time off. As an employer, the only thing you can say now is, yeah, sure, go ahead, take your time, we'll see you in a week. That's the way things have to be handled. I think the Nets have handled it pretty well. Kyrie had a couple of moments there where it didn't quite go as well, didn't handle it quite the way he should, but again, seems like he's made his amends and life is okay. And now we get a look at this new Nets team tomorrow night against the Cleveland Cavaliers. All right, a couple things real quick before we go here. Some bad news for the Portland Trail Blazers. CJ McCollum is going to miss about a month. He's got a broken foot. More bad injury luck for Portland. Yusuf Nurkic is going to miss some time again as well. You kind of feel for Damian Lillard a little bit. I mean, that's your backcourt mate. That's your guy. This is when they are healthy, one of the best backcourts in the NBA. That's a subtle Twitter joke, by the way. There was some members of Utah Jazz Twitter saying that Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell were the best backcourt in the NBA. But no, let's be honest here. This Portland team, the backcourt that they have, that is the best, and they're going to miss CJ for a big stretch here. Going to be out for about a month. Portland's in a situation now where they're, you know, in the thick of things in the Western Conference. They're right now the sixth seed. They're at 8-6. San Antonio's right there with them. Phoenix has leveled off a little bit after a hot start. The Warriors had a big win last night in Los Angeles over the Lakers. And the Memphis Grizzlies getting Ja Morant back as well. That might turn some things for them. The Grizzlies were able to tread water until Ja got back. They're 7-6, just a game behind the Blazers as well. You wonder where this is going to set Portland back here. Because Nurkic being hurt is one thing. We know the numbers offensively when Nurkic and Lillard are on the floor at the same time. But we certainly know what it's like when you've got Lillard and McCollum on the floor at the same time. You wonder where that offense is going to come from. You wonder where that production is going to be. And maybe this is the month stretch where Damian Lillard turns some heads and convinces people that, yeah, maybe this guy does win the MVP. Because at the beginning of the year, my MVP candidates, Luka Doncic, CJ McCollum, Steph Curry. Steph Curry has elevated a average Warriors roster, led them to a big win, big comeback win against the Lakers in LA last night. I don't know if you take anything away big picture from that game, but, you know, Steph has made some noise. I think we're headed for a stretch where Damian Lillard goes off for about a month to keep the Blazers in the playoff hunt away from the play-in round, and the narrative starts to turn. Because right now LeBron James is getting a little bit of MVP buzz, because he's playing pretty well. The Lakers look like a pretty good ball team. Last night's loss notwithstanding, but it would appear that LeBron has the inside track on the MVP narrative. I think this is where Damian Lillard takes over here in the next month to keep the Blazers afloat. To keep the Blazers afloat. Because look, 8-6 right now, you're sixth in the West. It's a strong conference. Dallas has really struggled. They've been missing a lot of rotation players as well, despite Luka's heroics. He's been great, but you know, they're missing a lot of rotation guys. If they get those guys back, if the Mavericks can tread water, you know, maybe they'll be there for the play-in round, depending on how things work out. But I think we're headed for about a month of Dame time, and it's going to be fun to watch. Yes, it's a total bummer that CJ McCollum's up for 4 weeks and a broken foot. You never know with foot injuries. You never really know. Particularly with big guys, I know, but with guards too, it can be an issue. You hope it heals fast, because initially for McCollum, it was going to be about a week. Now it's going to be a month. And there's some real concern there, obviously. But I think we're headed for Dame time. So just take that with you as we go into the week. Enjoy tomorrow night. Kyrie Irving, James Harden, Kevin Durant debuting together for the first time. It's, as always, a great time in the NBA. Thanks for tuning in. You can check us out if you missed us, Basketball Central, the page at our website, sportsnet.ca/650. Anything you missed, double back, check it out. You can check me out on Twitter as well. At Marcus Fitzy, DMs are open. You want to talk hoops? You want to talk anything else? I'm there. We'll do it again a week from now. This is the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.